Chapter 4.
To some extent, the direction of one's chosen path automatically selects for the paths that may cross it. A warrior's path will intersect the paths of other warriors, allies and enemies alike. A worker's path will intersect with the paths of other workers. But as with games of cards or dice, sometimes unexpected crossings occur. Some are driven by chance, others by design, others by a change in one's goals. Some are driven by malice. Such manipulations can prove effective in the short term, but the longer-term consequences can be perilously difficult to predict. The path of Arinda Price is one such example. A deep and perceptive study of it can serve as a valuable lesson, and as an even more valuable warning.
Ms. Price!
Arinda Price paused and turned around. Hurrying toward her down the long corridor was Arik Uvis, a data pad in his hand, an intense expression on his face. Arinda glowered to herself. Uvis, with one of his rock-brained questions or comments, wasn't something she really wanted to deal with right now. But he wasn't going away, and the Price Mining's corporate building was far too small for her to successfully avoid him all day.
Might as well get it over with.
He caught up to her and stopped.
Miss Price!
He repeated, breathing a little heavily. The man was in his mid-30s, about Arinda's own age, but in far worse shape.
Glad I caught you.
What can I do for you, Mr. Uvis?
Arinda asked, keeping her face and voice neutral.
I heard a rumor that your father's just uncovered a heretofore unknown vein of Dunium,
Uvis said.
Is that true?
It is,
Arinda said, wondering darkly who had let the news slip. Dunium was one of the hardest metals known, making it a key component in the manufacture of warship hulls, and under the Imperial Navy's recently accelerated shipbuilding program, the price of the metal had skyrocketed. Even a hint that a fresh line had been found would be enough to initiate a feeding frenzy among refiners and ore buyers alike.
May I ask how you heard of it?
That's not important,
Uvis said.
What's important is that we guard the find so that we can take full advantage of it.
I'm sure my mother's already on it, Arinda assured him. We have several contacts among brokers capable of handling something like this.
Uvis snorted.
I'm sure you do,
he said in a vaguely condescending tone.
Small local people, no doubt, who work on a promise and a handshake.
Not all of them are small, Arinda said, trying hard not to let her irritation show.
Uvis was an outsider from the Corps who'd been more or less forced on them by Governor Azadi's office 6 standard months ago.
She could probably count his trips outside the capital city area during that time on one hand. Not only did he know virtually nothing about Lothal, but he clearly didn't care to learn.
But so what if they are? If any one of them can't handle the full contract, we'll just make deals with 2 or 3 or 4. Everything's interconnected here.
And I have no doubt that system works fine for the average backwoods Outer Rim world,
Uvis said with strained patience.
But some of us have higher ambitions for Lothal.
Arinda snorted under her breath. Ambitions for a backwater dirtball like Lothal? Right.
Good luck with that one.
I'm serious,
Uvis insisted.
Now that we have a Dunium vein...
We have a Dunium vein?
Arinda cut him off.
Price Mining. Not you, and not Lothal. We have it.
Fine,
Uvis said.
Just remember, the governor's office and I are included in that we. We're your partners, remember?
Not for long, Arinda said. As soon as the profits from the Dunium start rolling in, we're buying out of your loan. We can do that. The contract says so.
The contract didn't anticipate something like this.
Uvis took a deep breath.
Look, Arinda, here's the reality.
Yes, you've got wealth now, more than you ever dreamed of.
That means it's your big chance. Not just Price Mining's, but yours, personally as well.
Really?
Arinda said, trying to make the words sarcastic, but she couldn't quite pull it off. Because he was right. This kind of sudden wealth might finally make it possible for her to get out of here. Not just out of the family business, but off Lothal completely.
But it's also going to attract attention, and not necessarily the good kind,
Uvis continued.
You need...
He broke off, as a hammer-headed Ithorian appeared around the corner and hurried past them, a stack of data cards in her hand. Someone's niece, Arinda vaguely remembered, working a 2-week internship. The Ithorian grunted a good morning, then disappeared around a different corner.
You need support, Uvis said.
More than that, you need protection. Governor Azadi can give you that.
The nebulous thought of finally getting off Lothal vanished in a sudden cloud of suspicion.
Protection?
She countered.
Or do you mean takeover?
No, of course not,
Uvis protested.
Really?
Arinda said.
Because we've heard this before. Other people have come to Lothal, lots of them, looking for ways to lift us up out of the dust and coincidentally make themselves rich. Sooner or later, they all find out that the people here are stubborn, set in their ways, and not interested in having fancy hats from the Corps tell them what to do.
I'm glad Lothal has come to terms with mediocrity,
Uvis ground out.
But that pattern is over. The fancy hats will be coming back. This time to stay. And they'll eat small fish like Price Mining for breakfast.
Don't threaten me, Uvis, she warned.
I'm not threatening you, he said. I'm trying to tell you that everything's about to change. There are a dozen ways a big mining corporation can move in on a small operation like yours and either take it over or bleed it dry. I don't want that, you don't want that, and Governor Azadi most definitely doesn't want that.
With an effort, Arinda got a fresh grip on her temper. So Uvis had already told Azadi about the Dunium?
Damn!
In a tight-knit community like Capital City, that meant half the citizens knew by now. And if half the citizens knew, a good quarter of the outsiders in the area probably knew too.
I assume you have a solution to offer?
We do,
Uvis assured her.
We start with you selling the governor another 21% of Price Mining. That would...
What?
Arinda demanded, feeling her jaw drop.
Absolutely not. You're not getting a controlling interest.
It's the only way to keep some predatory megacorporation off your back,
Uvis said.
With the power and office of the governor protecting you, we can make deals with real refineries, the kind with money and influence.
No,
Arinda said flatly. Uvis took a deep breath.
Yeah. I know this is a big step,
he said, his tone soothing now.
But it's the only way.
I said no,
Arinda repeated.
You need to at least tell your parents about the governor's offer,
Uvis persisted.
At least your mother, as the general manager, she needs to know.
Which part of no is confusing you?
Uvis's face darkened.
If you don't, I will.
No. What you'll do is get out of my sight,
Arinda told him.
Actually, what you can do is get off our property.
He snorted.
Please. I own 30% of Price Mining. You can't just throw me out.
The Price family owns 70%,
Arinda countered.
And the guard droids answer to us.
For a long moment, they stared at each other. Then Uvis inclined his head.
Very well, Ms. Price, he said. But hear this. You can sit on your dirty little world, a big frog in a small dust puddle, and think you can stand alone against the galaxy. But you can't. The sooner you realize that, the less it'll cost you.
He raised his eyebrows.
And your parents.
Goodbye, Mr. Uvis,
Arinda said.
Goodbye, Ms. Price, he said. Call me when you're ready to see reason.
Uvis himself was gone, but the cloud he'd left over Arinda persisted. A dozen times that day, she thought about going to her mother and letting her know about Uvis's warning and offer. But each time she decided not to. The mine had been in her family almost all the way back to the first planetary settlements, and she knew that both her parents would go down fighting rather than give it up. They had full legal rights to the mine, the land, and the business. Moreover, the Lothal legal system, where any challenges would be heard, was loaded with acquaintances, suppliers, clients, friends, and friends of friends. The one advantage of living on a sleepy frontier world. Whatever corporations or slicksters or sleazy grubbers from the governor's office tried to throw at them, they would weather the storm. She worked late, finishing up the day's data sorting and drafting a data release for whenever her parents decided to announce the news. Just because half of Lothal probably knew by now didn't mean they wouldn't eventually have to say something official. It was nearly sundown when she finally left the office. She headed for home, driving slower than usual, watching the colors in the western sky and the fading light as it bounced sparkles off the shrubs and intricate rock formations lining the roadway. On the horizon, the lights of Capital City's buildings were coming on, a softer and whiter glow than the reds and pinks of the setting sun. From somewhere in the distance came the happy shrieking of children at play. Off on the horizon, she could see a pair of airspeeders, probably with teenagers at the controls, showboating over the rolling, grass-covered hills as they chased the setting sun. It was the kind of primitive beauty that travel advisors raved about. Arinda hated it. That hadn't always been the case. For a while, back when she was a child, she'd loved the quiet life, the wide open spaces, and the companionship of children of so many different species and backgrounds. But during her teen years, she'd begun to see the quietness as dullness, the open spaces as lack of culture or excitement, the familiar acquaintances as stifling and boring. Often lying awake in bed, she'd gaze out the window at the stars and wished with all her heart that she could escape to a real world somewhere. A place with excitement and bright lights and sophisticated people. But she never had. And with the passing of her teen years and her transition to the responsibilities of adulthood, she knew she never would. The pain and frustration had subsided somewhat over the last decade, but they had never entirely disappeared. She still hated her life here. But it was a familiar, constant hatred, like a dull ache that had never quite healed. She slowed the land speeder a little more, watching the interplay of city light and sunset glow. In worlds with excitement and bright lights, she suspected, many of the inhabitants never even saw the horizon, let alone a sunset.
Of course, they probably didn't care about such things. If she were there, she doubted she would care either. Could Uvis have been right about the Dunium deposits being her chance to finally escape?
She snorted.
Of course not.
That whole pitch had been a mind game, designed to distract her from his attempt to talk his way into controlling the company. Let him try. She didn't especially like her life here, but it was her life, and Price Mining was her company, and she would see Uvis in hell before she would let anyone steal it.
The last wisps of color had faded away, and she was pulling her land speeder into her garage when her comm chimed. She glanced at the ID. It was her father, and keyed it on.
"Hello, father," she greeted him. "What's up?"
"Arinda, you need to get to the police station right away,"
Talmor Price said, his voice nearly unrecognizable.
"Your mother's been arrested."
Arinda stared.
"What? What in the world for? And who ordered it?"
"The complaint came from the governor's office,"
Talmor said, his breath coming in short spurts.
"The charge is embezzlement."
Talmor Price had worked in the family mine all his life, and Arinda had seen him act calmly and decisively in dozens of crisis situations. But this crisis wasn't mine-based, and for once, he clearly had no idea what to do. The police didn't seem to know what to do either. Talmor and Arinda were on a first-name basis with several of them, but this time, those personal contacts weren't enough to smooth things out, or even cut through the bureaucratic clutter. All the police could say was that Elenia was in custody. Her bail request had been denied, and they'd been ordered not to allow her visitors. The person behind the order hadn't been named, but everything had come directly from the governor's office. Not that Arinda didn't already know who was behind it.
"Arik Uvis works with Azadi's office,"
Talmor pointed out as he and Arinda left the station.
"Maybe he can help."
"Maybe,"
Arinda said, a twinge of guilt briefly warming the ice that had formed in her soul. In retrospect, she should have told her parents about her last conversation with Uvis. At least they wouldn't have been so utterly blindsided by this cowardly attack.
"I'll go see him after I drop you off."
"Thanks, when I'm okay,"
Talmor said.
"We can go see him together."
"I really think you should go home,"
Arinda persisted. A plan was slowly forming in the back of her mind, the kind that worked best without witnesses present.
"Barkin was going to keep trying for bail. If he gets it, you don't want to be all the way across Capital City when Mother's ready for you to come get her."
"I suppose,"
Talmor conceded.
"You'll let me know what Uvis says, won't you?"
"Absolutely," Arinda promised. "But I'm not expecting anything right away. Try to get some sleep, okay?"
"I'll try."
He eyed her, his eyes narrowing slightly.
"Be careful, Arinda."
"Don't worry,"
Arinda assured him grimly.
"I will."
It was pure good luck the Senator Domus Renking happened to be on Lothal, instead of on the distant world of Coruscant, where he spent most of his time. According to the press releases, he'd come back to his homeworld for a short vacation and some meetings with Governor Azadi and other political and industrial leaders, and was slated to leave in 2 days. Arinda arrived precisely at 9 in the morning, when Ranking's office opened, and gave her name and reason for her visit to the smiling woman at the reception desk. 2 hours later, she was finally ushered inside.
"Ms. Price,"
Ranking greeted her, standing courteously as she came in.
"Please sit down."
"Thank you, Senator,"
Arinda said, passing between the pair of silent guards flanking the doorway and continuing on to the chair in front of Ranking's desk.
"Thank you for seeing me."
"It was probably inevitable,"
Ranking said with a smile, waiting until she had seated herself before resuming his own seat.
"I understand your mother Alania has been arrested for embezzlement.
Yes, she has, Arinda said. And she's innocent.
Ranking leaned back in his chair.
Tell me more.
Yes, Senator.
Arinda keyed her datapad and tapped for the first file.
First of all, my mother's finances,
she said, setting the datapad on the desk and turning it around to face him.
You'll see that there isn't a boost in any of her accounts. If she embezzled, the money had to go somewhere.
She could have set up a secret account,
Ranking pointed out.
Possibly even off-world.
Agreed,
Arinda said.
But if she embezzled, the funds, by definition, had to come from Price Mining. I ran everything from the company's side, digging through all the vectors she had access to. There are no indications of missing money, credit, or resources. No virtual transactions either.
That you could find.
I know more about Price Mining's computer operations than my mother does, Arinda said. There's no way she could pull off something that I couldn't track.
Ranking said. I presume you realize how that makes you look.
Yes, and I didn't embezzle either, Arinda said, reaching across the desk and keying for the next file. This is the company's profit data for the past 2 years. You can see there are regular dips and surges over that time period.
Galactic market fluctuations,
Ranking said, nodding.
Happens in every industry. Your point?
You can see a pattern, Arinda said. Dips here, here, and here. If there was embezzlement, it would probably have been time to hit just the right spot to maybe not get noticed.
You say if there was embezzlement,
Ranking said.
I was under the impression that Governor Azadi's office had confirmed there were funds missing.
So I've heard,
Arinda said, bracing herself as she again tapped the datapad. Now came the tricky part.
But it may not be as simple as missing funds. Here's a security video from a party at the company 2 weeks ago, right in the middle of the latest financial dip.
She pointed to a broad-faced being with fuzzy jowls and wide-set eyes dressed in a dark brown tunic.
You see the Lutrillion here at the side?
Yes.
That's Pomi Harchmack,
Arinda said.
She handles the heavy equipment inventory operations. Her account is separate from the main operating fund account. Now, there. See how she slips out of the room right at the height of the party?
Yes,
Ranking said.
Where does that hallway lead?
To the central office cluster,
Arinda said.
Her desk is in there, from which she can access the entire inventory system. Oh, and a fresh order of digging heads had just come in, with the funds slated to go out the next morning. A perfect time for her to act.
Also a perfect time for a drinking partygoer to go to the restroom,
Ranking pointed out.
What makes you think that's not what she's doing?
Because she leaves 3 more times in the next 2 hours and has gone at least 10 minutes each time,
Arinda said.
What does that have to do with anything?
Because that's how financial transactions work here,
Arinda said.
I don't know how it is on Coruscant, but on Lothal, secure fund shifting usually requires 2 or 3 touch points, and the authorization codes sometimes bounce back and forth over an hour or more.
Ranking grunted.
Pretty inefficient.
Extremely inefficient,
Arinda agreed sourly. It was yet another part of Lothal's quaint approach to life that she found infuriating.
But we're stuck with it. The banks and supply houses all have their own ways of doing things, and none of them like turning everything over to computers or droids. Everyone wants to have a personal touch in big transactions.
Yes, that does sound like Lothal,
Ranking conceded. He poised a finger over the datapad.
May I?
Certainly.
He tapped the datapad to fast-forward the recording. As far as Arinda could tell, He had no suspicions that what she told him was anything but the truth. And it was, really. Except that Arinda remembered her mother mentioning earlier that day how Pomi Harchmack had been having digestive problems.
Which meant all those disappearances almost certainly were to the restroom.
Maybe Harchmack was innocent.
Maybe there were no missing funds, and Uvis was simply making a bald-faced play for control.
Or maybe the stomach thing had been a deception, an excuse, and Harchmack was genuinely guilty. Arinda didn't know. She also didn't care. All she cared about was drawing enough suspicion off her mother to persuade Ranking to intervene. Once he did, Harchmack's guilt or innocence was her own problem.
"May I make a copy of all this?"
Ranking asked.
"Actually, I already made you one,"
Arinda said, pulling a data card from her pocket and placing it on the desk.
He smiled wryly as he picked it up.
"Rather sure of ourselves, are we?"
"Just the opposite," Arinda said. "If I couldn't get you to see me in person, I thought you might at least look at the evidence I'd compiled."
"I'm glad I decided to take the time,"
Ranking said.
"Give me a moment."
He finished watching the security recording, then silently pushed the data pad back across the desk to Arinda and turned to his computer. For the next few minutes, he worked the keys, gazing at the display. Arinda remained where she was, trying without success to read his expression. Finally, he hit one last key and turned back to face her.
"Here's the situation," he said, his voice grave. "First, as matters stand, I can't lift the embezzlement charge."
Arinda stared at him. That wasn't the answer she'd been expecting.
"What about Harchmack? I just showed you there's another suspect who's at least as viable as my mother."
"No, she's viable, all right,"
Ranking agreed.
"And I've no doubt she'll be detained as soon as I pass this on to the police. But without proof of your mother's innocence, Governor Azadi isn't going to release her."
"Can we at least get her out on bail?"
"You really don't understand what this is about?"
Ranking asked, giving her an odd look.
"This is Azadi's attempt to take over Price Mining."
"Azadi's or Uvis's?"
"Does it matter?"
"Probably not,"
Arinda conceded.
"That's why I came to you instead of pleading my case to him. I hoped that if I gave you enough ammunition, you could stop him. Now you're telling me you can't?"
Ranking raised his eyebrows.
"What makes you think I want to stop him?"
he asked.
"What makes you think I'm not part of his plan?"
Arinda pursed her lips. What did make her think that?
"Because if you were part of the plot, you wouldn't have told me about it. You'd have kept quiet or encouraged me to make a deal to sell out."
"Very good,"
Ranking said, favoring her with a small smile.
"You're right. There is a certain rivalry between the governor and me. And there is a way I can help your mother. But I don't think you'll like it."
"I'm listening."
"I can get the charges dropped,"
Ranking said.
"Sounds good so far,"
Arinda said.
"What about the company?"
"That's the part you won't like,"
Ranking said.
"You'll have to sign the mine over to the Empire."
Arinda had suspected something like that was coming. Even so, the words were like a punch in the gut.
"The Empire?"
Ranking held out his hands, palms upward.
"You're going to lose the mine, Arinda," he said. "Either to Azadi or to the Empire."
"Because of the Dunium."
"Basically,"
Ranking said.
"Bear in mind that Coruscant can take it by fiat with no compensation at all. Right now they'd prefer to play nice in this part of the Outer Rim, but that restraint won't last forever. This way, at least you'll get your mother out and new jobs for your family."
Arinda shook her head.
"I don't think they'd want to work the mine for someone else."
"Oh, I wasn't talking about keeping them here,
Ranking assured her.
Not at Price Mining or anywhere else on Lothal. Governor Azadi is a vindictive man, and as long as they're in his jurisdiction, he might be tempted to mess with them out of pure spite. Fortunately, there's a mine I know on Baton that needs an assistant manager and an experienced foreman. I already have an offer.
Arinda smiled tightly. The 2 hours you kept me waiting outside.
Ranking shrugged.
That and other things. Unfortunately, there's no data work position for you at the moment, but the owner says he can put you on inventory until something better opens up.
I see,
Arinda said, watching him closely. Lothal was awash with petty politics, and over the years she'd learned how to navigate them. If the same rules applied to the Imperial version,
I suppose I could just stay here on Lothal until then.
I wouldn't advise that, Ranking said quickly. Not with Azadi unhappy with you.
Unhappy with me?
Ranking's lip twitched in a small smile.
Unhappy with me, then,
he conceded.
He probably wouldn't hesitate to try squeezing me either,
Arinda said slowly, as if she were just now working it out.
That wouldn't be good for either of us.
Hardly,
Ranking said, a mixture of amusement and resignation on his face.
Let's skip to the last page. What exactly do you want?
I want to go to Coruscant, Arinda said. You must have 100 good assistant positions you can offer. I want one of them.
In exchange for what?
Ranking asked.
Favors have to work both ways.
In exchange for not making trouble when the Empire takes over Price Mining,
Arinda said.
Maybe you've forgotten what people are like here, but they won't be happy about a bald-faced takeover.
Oh, I remember just fine,
Ranking assured her.
Why do you think I'm taking this approach instead of just letting the Empire move in directly and cut Azadi off at the knees? Lothal's like every other frontier planet in the Outer Rim. Unruly and a potential pain in the rear.
But a new Dunium vein is worth the trouble.
It's worth a lot of trouble.
Ranking took a deep breath, eyeing Arinda closely.
All right. As it happens, I do have a job on Coruscant I can offer you. There's an opening in one of my citizen assistance offices.
What are those?
My job is to represent Lothal's interests on Coruscant,
Ranking said.
That includes citizens visiting or temporarily working there. It turns out that there's a decent-sized contingent of such displaced citizens working in the Coruscant mines.
Arinda's surprise must have shown, because he smiled.
Not real mines, of course. Not like yours,
he said.
These are more like reclamation operations, where centuries' worth of dumped slag, metal shards, and other debris is dug up from around the foundations of old industrial plants. The Lothal contingent is always in flux, so I have an assistance office in the area to help them with housing and general orientation, as well as guiding them through the Coruscant bureaucratic maze.
How many people are we talking about?
About 500 at the moment,
Ranking said.
But there are miners and support personnel from a dozen other Outer Rim worlds working the reclamation projects as well. And that number probably comes to 10,000 or more. I have people who understand bureaucracy, but no one who understands mines and the specific needs and language of miners. I think you'd be a great asset to me.
I'm sure I would, Arinda said. What would my housing and salary be? And when would you want me to leave Lothal?
Housing would be modest, but salary would be far higher than here,
Ranking said, studying her face.
Enough to maintain your current lifestyle, even at Coruscant prices. As to leaving, I could take you there as soon as the agreement with the Empire for price mining is finalized. Unless you'd like to help settle your parents on Baton first, of course.
That would probably be best, Arinda said. Assuming I can persuade them to go along with this plan in the first place.
I hope for their sake that you can,
Ranking warned, his voice going darker.
It's either this, or your mother's next mining job could be on Kessel.
Then I'd better go talk to them.
Arinda stood up and slipped her data pad back into its pouch.
I assume you can get the visitor ban on my mother lifted?
I'll give the order as soon as you're out the door.
Thank you, Arinda said. I'll be in touch.
5 minutes later, she was driving down the roadway, her mind spinning with conflicting thoughts and emotions. So this was it. After years of waiting, after years of knowing it would never happen, she was finally getting off Lothal. Not just off Lothal, but to Coruscant. And all it would cost was her parents' jobs and dignity, and several generations of the Price family legacy. It wasn't as if Ranking was being completely altruistic, either. Part of his goal in accepting Arinda's thinly veiled demand was clearly to split up the family, which would help stifle any legal challenge or local stirring they might decide to mount. But machinations and plots aside, one point stood out clearly. Coruscant. As a child, she'd wanted to see the lights and colors and big buildings of that distant world. In the turmoil of her teenage hopelessness and desperation, the glittering capital had seemed the epitome of the life she so desperately wanted. Now, when all hope was past, she was finally going to get there.
Ranking had his own reasons and agenda.
But then so did Arinda. Because along with the lights and colors and big buildings, Coruscant was first and foremost the center of Imperial political power. The power that Azadi had used to put her mother in prison. The power Ranking was using to take their mine for the Empire. The power that Arinda would someday use to take it back. So her parents would accept Ranking's terms. Arinda would see to that. And then she would go to Coruscant and work in Ranking's little assistant's office and be a good girl and a model employee. Right up until the moment when she found a way to take him down.